All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman. I am joined today by the editor of SB Nation's Baltimore Beatdown blog, Kyle Barber. We're going to be talking about the Ravens offseason as well as their upcoming 2018 season expectations.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the Internet, on Twitter, at FalcFans, as well as the host of this illustrious Locked on Falcons podcast. We are continuing our look at the AFC North, talking to Kyle Barber, the managing editor at the Baltimore Beatdown blog, the SB Nation site for the Baltimore Ravens. You can find Kyle on Twitter at BB underscore Kyle P. Barber on Twitter. We had Kyle on many years ago, back in the previous incarnation of this podcast, back when it was known as the Falc Fans Podcast, talking about that great human being out there by the name of none other than Courtney Upshaw and what he might be bringing to the table in Atlanta. And so I want to welcome Kyle back to talk about this Ravens team in 2018. Maybe we will talk a little bit about Courtney Upshaw a little bit later. I don't know. Maybe we'll get to it.
Yeah, I'm actually, thank you very much for bringing me on. I'm excited to be here. I actually was one of the first things I wanted to talk about was Courtney Upshaw and how he ended up playing for the Atlanta Falcons. So we need to get to that at some point.
Yeah, definitely. He provided a lot of comedy with his excellent pass rushing ability. At least personal comedy for me. So,
ouch.
So the Falcons are going to be playing the Ravens a little bit later in the season. I'm sure I'll get to talk with Kyle a little bit later leading up to that game. But part of this is to sort of get a primer on these teams that so rarely face each other. You know, it's been such a long time to sort of understanding what's going on in Baltimore. And it helps me not only just have a clue what's going on with these other teams heading into the Falcons season and maybe some potential matchups and things to watch for in the lead up to that game, but also for the listeners who, you know, we don't learn enough about other conferences. We so get so hyper-focused on who do we got to beat within our own conference to make the playoffs. And so I think it's valuable to learn about some teams that aren't as necessarily on your radar. That being said, Kyle, I do want to talk. It seems like the big question with the Ravens, and has been the case the last couple of years, is can their offense get to a level of consistency? They've shown some growth these last couple of years. They've had some continuity finally with Morningweg entering his third season. It seemed like every year prior to that, they were changing offensive coordinators like every other week. They've made major changes to the wide receiver core and their tight end core, picked up two draft picks early in draft, including Hayden Hurst. They have three new wide receivers, Michael Crabtree, John Brown, and every Falcon fan's favorite in Willie Snead. I'm curious, sort of looking at this group, what changes and what improvements are the Ravens expecting out of a brand new set of receivers going with Joe Flacco this year?
That's a great way to start it off. I believe Michael Crabtree is the guy that the Ravens have really lacked since the departure of Anquan Boldin / Steve Smith Sr. Obviously, Steve Smith is somebody you all know way too, you are all too familiar with.
Yes.
But for the Ravens, I mean, he continued to turn it on, and even at 37 years old, he was shredding defenses consistently, which was rather impressive. But ever since Smith left, it was really a big void that they tried to fill with Jeremy Maclin, and Maclin didn't produce to any sort of expectations that the Ravens had hoped. But after that season ended, they let Maclin go. They let Mike Wallace go and sign with the Philadelphia Eagles. And now they signed Michael Crabtree to a decent deal. And with that, he looks like the guy that can make tough catches. He can move the chains. He can create red zone opportunities. And he can also score on red zone opportunities. That's something that the Ravens are really desperate for as of late. Due to the lack of playmaking ability, they're always relying on one or two big plays that would be spawned from nothing as opposed to drawing it up and producing it on the field. Michael Crabtree was actually a huge threat against the Ravens. He had scored 9 touchdowns in, I believe, only 3 or 4 games, including a 3-touchdown game against the Ravens defense when he was with the Oakland Raiders. So more than anything, I'm just happy to not have to play against that man anymore, because he is a lethal threat against Baltimore. They're also excited about John Brown and his big play ability. You know, he is known to be a fast receiver. He's got good hands. He was similar to Mike Wallace. And if he stays healthy, which unfortunately is a phrase all too common in the Baltimore Ravens vocabulary, he would be able to, score points and produce plays and get somewhere going. And that's the same with Willie Snead. The Ravens lack a decent threat in the slot. And I hope, and I assume the Ravens hope that all three of these guys can culminate into an offense that we haven't seen from Joe Flacco and the team in recent years.
Now, you mentioned injuries, and that's been a problem for the Ravens. You know, the wide receiver core, you've had injuries to Steve Smith, Rashad Perriman. You've had injuries to your tight ends. You've picked up two rookies, as I mentioned, to help shore up that position. You had devastating injuries on your offensive line this past year, missing, you know, the incomparable Marshall Yanda for most of the season. You have Yanda coming back. You have a young, talented left tackle, Ronnie Stanley. But it does seem like there are still questions up front for the Ravens, particularly losing two starters like Ryan Jensen and Austin Howard this offseason. What are your expectations of whether this offensive line is going to be able to make strides and hold up and allow Joe Flacco time to get the ball into the hands of some of the new playmakers that they've added?
Absolutely. I am nervous as of now to see where the Ravens can develop talent or players in those prime positions of center and right tackle. They signed James Hurst to a 4-year contract. He's always been a decent to a good guard. He produces starter quality guard play, but he's just been incredibly strugglesome when it comes to the right tackle position. People get faster, they get bigger, they get stronger, and he can't handle the mismatch suddenly. And so this is something that's very nerve-wracking for all Ravens fans, because James Hurst is the person that actually got shoved into Joe Flacco's knee when he got bull rushed and shoved back, and that's what caused the ACL tear. So that's something that everybody's really stressing out about. They drafted Orlando Brown Jr., or Zeus Jr., in the third round, I believe. And so with this pick, it's going to everybody's a little bit nervous, because he definitely had a terrible combine, but his play and his numbers, you know, when he was on the field and the eye test itself, looked really good. As for center, Matt Skura was the center / guard right behind Ryan Jensen. They both were developing side by side, and Ryan Jensen stepped it up. One of the stories that you'll be able to read about how he became so good was he was diagnosed with sleep apnea. They had no idea about it, so his body wasn't getting rest, and he was terrible at play. It was actually wrote by Edward Lee of the Baltimore Sun, which is a great piece. And they realized, you know, his body wasn't recovering. He wasn't sleeping right. He had bad attitude problems at one point. He wasn't able to produce. So now that Ryan Jensen got healthy, he was able to produce starter quality play. Now that he's gone, though, Skura was of the same caliber in development, and we hope that he can become something more with this year, because I do expect him to take over the center position.
Interesting. All right, we got more to come talking about the Ravens, but I want to plug LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball content. LockedOnSports.com, your team every day. I think, I'll save my Lamar Jackson question for later, but because I think that's a much bigger topic. Let's talk a little bit about the defense a little bit. And we know that the defense has been a stalwart in Baltimore. It's probably not, you know, obviously it's not necessarily reminiscent of where it was in terms of its peak back in the heyday of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and Terrell Suggs, but it still has consistently been a legitimate top 10 unit over these past 5 or so years since, you know, Suggs and Sizzle has gotten a little older and those other guys have left. I'm curious, sort of, what are your expectations for the unit this year? Are you expecting big improvement from some of the younger players like Tim Williams and Marlon Humphrey and Tavon Young and Tyus Bowser? Or is this still going to be a unit that's primarily led by veterans like Sizzle, like Eric Weddle and Tony Jefferson, who are probably one of the better safety duos in the league? You have Jimmy Smith coming off of a torn Achilles. Is this going to be a year where the vets are still expected to carry the bulk of the load, or is this maybe a year where you're hoping to see them pass the torch a little bit to a new generation of potential Ravens superstars that will lead to, you know, another decade long of defensive success.
I am hoping that this is the year the baton is passed. I don't know if I'm expecting it. I'm hoping for it, and there's definitely a decent chance of it becoming so. Matt Judon has continued to progress as the, you know, the outside linebacker opposite of Terrell Suggs. He's done a great job. He went from 4 sacks to 8 last year. He's only gotten stronger. I've seen his workout videos. I've seen his play, and he's only continued to progress. And I think this is the year that he really steps up, and I think he cracks double-digit sacks, and I think he's going to become one of the leaders on this defense. C.J. Mosley will continue to play at his prime level. On a down year, he still managed nearly 100 tackles, 4 interceptions, a couple sacks, and he's always been a leader. He's been a leader since, you know, Ray left, and they picked up C.J. Not the next year, but the year after. But I still think that Suggs and Eric Weddle, Tony Jefferson, and Jimmy Smith will have a huge establishment and a huge chunk of this defense and leadership and, you know, producing at their high quality levels. I'm expecting Tavon Young to return to form. As a rookie, he was one of the top three in production, according to PFF. He looked incredible. I was very much impressed with his play. He was able to, you know, defend Tyler Eifert in the red zone, which is a feat that shouldn't occur. I mean, I don't know if Tavon Young's actually 6 foot, but we know Tyler Eifert's well over 6'5", and he was still able to outjump him on fade passes. It was really impressive. So the combination of Marlon Humphrey, the draft pick of Anthony Averett, the return of Tavon Young, Jimmy Smith still, you know, returning to form, and Brandon Carr. This is a really strong secondary that is not being talked about, mainly because it's tough too when Brandon Carr is getting up in age and Jimmy Smith is, you know, questionable with his Achilles tear, and Tavon Young's coming off this ACL tear. So it'll be unique to really see where these players are going afterwards. But back to the original question of who's going to hold the bulk of this defense and produce, it's tough to not still say the veteran players won't have their hand in it.
Well, you know, you have the right veterans, I guess, so that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, Sizzle's still going strong, and I expect him to give Jake Matthews all types of fits in that Ravens game later this season, because he's sort of the guy that, you know, even if he's not quite to his, you know, former form, his peak form, he's still got that veteran savvy where I think he can give this Falcons offensive line a lot of problems. So I'm not looking forward to watching him, you know, go out in a blaze of glory if it comes to that against Atlanta. You know, if only you could have cut Terrell Suggs and kept Courtney Upshaw and allowed the Falcons to get him instead. But
No. It's all good. He won that Super Bowl with the Ravens. You know, he was great at Alabama. Totally your guy.
Yeah,
totally your guy.
Absolutely. I do appreciate Courtney Upshaw, though. He did seem to come alive against Carolina these last couple of years. Apparently, he's still holding a grudge against Cam Newton with the Alabama-Auburn thing. So I did appreciate that.
Yeah, no kidding. My goodness.
Yeah. We're going to touch a little bit more on Lamar Jackson, the Ravens phenom cornerback, in a bit. But I do want to plug the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, they're about on the verge of turning their attention to the 2019 college football season and evaluating those prospects. Go ahead and subscribe to Locked On the NFL Draft Podcast, your team every day. Let's talk a little bit about Lamar Jackson. And obviously, it's still Joe Flacco's team. Obviously, you know, the future may or may not involve Lamar Jackson. Whether that future comes in 2018, 2019, or further down the road, we'll have to see. I'm curious, sort of, what are your expectations? We know Joe Flacco's going to start week one, but I do wonder, you know, where's the scenario where, or how do you feel about the scenario where Joe Flacco is Joe Flacco, whatever you think of him, he's Joe Flacco. He's been that guy for a decade. Mm-hmm. And then Lamar Jackson comes in, has this great summer, and starts to get the buzz going, as we've seen in recent years with certain teams when they have this young quarterback waiting in wings. Is there a potential where you know, not necessarily a quarterback controversy from the coaching and the team part, but basically a clamoring for the fans to get some new blood in this offense. Is that going to, you know, be a cloud hanging over the season a little bit and may not allow the Ravens to operate at peak efficiency?
Everybody's excited about Lamar Jackson, including myself. I've seen his tape. Everybody's seen his tape. It's hard not to. As soon as he was drafted by the Ravens, every website, including our own, was, you know, completely enamored with the possibility of Lamar Jackson taking the mantle from Joe Flacco, even as early as the season. My expectations for him, first off, are I believe he won't see the field much. The only opportunities he's going to see the field is either a complete blowout on either end of the scoreboard, Joe Flacco's injury, or they've also discussed possible packages because the Ravens know what they have in Lamar Jackson. Obviously, there's a reason they drafted him. So they understand his playmaking ability. They understand what he commands when he's on the field. And with that, they have been interested in putting in both Flacco and Lamar on the field at the same time. It remains to be seen whether that occurs. I don't know if it will or will not, but that is something they've been discussing multiple times. But as for how would Lamar actually take to the field would be 0-3, Joe Flacco doing not just bad, but really bad. I'm talking he's, you know, maybe one touchdown, two touchdowns, but, you know, at least three times as many interceptions compared to those, fumbles, and it's not due to bad line play. Or even if it is, it still could be something that people will clamor for. Well, Lamar would be able to escape from the pockets. He'd be able to create something downfield. We've seen it in Cam. We saw it in Colin Kaepernick. Saw it in RG3 before his knee injury, or even Cam Newton. So it'll be tough to see if that would actually ever occur. I don't think the Ravens' first 3 weeks are actually much more kind than the weeks 4 through 10. I believe is where the Ravens play the gauntlet. But Lamar Jackson, I don't think we'll be seeing the field in 2018. We expect it in 2019 due to Joe Flacco's $28.75 million cap hit, whereas they save $18 million if they cut Joe Flacco or, you know, get rid of him. So that'll be when Lamar Jackson, I believe, takes over.
So it sounds like you're expecting this to be more of a Patrick Mahomes type of situation where Flacco sort of, you know, does whatever he does this year. And obviously expectations and hopes are that, you know, the Ravens will make the playoffs, but there may be a passing of the torch at some point, you know, late in the season, if anything, you know, maybe a week 17. I guess what I'm fishing for, Kyle, is, you know, I'm planning on making my first attendance to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta this year, and I want to know if I choose that Ravens game in week 13, will I get to see Lamar Jackson play? Because that will definitely determine, you know, if I'm going to fork out money for these, you know, pricey tickets, I want to be have maximum entertainment value, and certainly possibility of Lamar Jackson starting. You know, I'm just wondering, like, my expectations, again, from as an outside perspective, I would be shocked unless there was an injury that Lamar got work early in the season. You know, maybe the Ravens have like a week 10 bye, and maybe if they were like 2-7 or something like that, or whatever, going into that bye, I think
Joe Flacco's taken off the field if they're 2-7 by that bye. Yeah, that's what I'm confident in. By the way.
Yeah. Okay.
Continue. I'm sorry.
No, that's fair. And you know, whether you know, I look at the schedule and I think the Ravens certainly should be better than that going at that point. But you're right; there are some tough matchups there, and if things don't quite necessarily, you know, they get some bad breaks here or there, maybe there's a possibility that we could sort of see Lamar Jackson late in the season at that point. But, you know, I was very much sort of happy that the Ravens took Lamar Jackson. I was like, this is the best landing spot for Lamar Jackson just because of some of the reasons you outlined. And just the Ravens, I really do, you know, I don't think Flacco is as bad as some people, particularly Falcon fans, like to portray him just because of that Ryan Flacco rivalry. But at the same time, he has not been particularly great these last couple of years. And I do think for this Ravens team, they certainly need, you know, that new fresh blood to sort of move them in a new direction, similar to what we were seeing with Mahomes in Kansas City, and we saw several years ago with Colin Kaepernick with Alex Smith as well. I just mm-hmm. feel like Flacco's in that mode. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with the Joe Flacco has not been as good as people say. He's also not been as bad. He's been a very middling quarterback with, you know, he's, I think he's below the 16 of 32 line, you know, the median on where all 32 starting quarterbacks have been. I'd say he bumps anywhere from like 11 all the way down to 25. And it's incredibly frustrating because he's so unbelievably talented when it comes to the postseason. And that's so strange and unique that when, you know, the pressure turns on, when playoffs come around, all of a sudden he becomes a quarterback that can tie Joe Montana's records mm-hmm. in a postseason. But yeah. in the same light, he can tie Blake Bortles in interceptions in a game. Yeah. It's just frustrating. And that's why, you know, it's hard to strike a balance because this is also in the sports journalism world of where everything needs to be solid good or solid bad, and gray areas aren't always defined as well. But I'm thrilled with the pick of Lamar Jackson. I wanted Lamar Jackson at 16, or I would have been totally okay with him at 16. I was very impressed the Ravens hung on, waited, allowed every other quarterback to be taken off the board because somehow Josh Allen looks better than Lamar Jackson in people's books. And I'm from Wyoming, so I can say that about Josh Allen, who played at University of Wyoming. And yet, you know, now the Ravens have him on a slightly cheaper contract. They still have the fifth-year option with him. And they have somebody that they can build on for the future because Joe Flacco has been in the league for 11 years now. And this could be something that, you know, you would rather start taking care of something a year early rather than a year late. And I really hope to see Lamar Jackson in 2019 ball out. Man, I'm excited for that. I am excited to see this stuff progress in the years coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I have an aunt that's a Ravens fan, and I'm just happy that, you know, she can get excited about certain things, you know, in the future. Speaking of the future, my last question for you, Kyle, is, you know, is this a sort of hot seat season for John Harbaugh? As I said at the top, they have made incremental improvements in terms of their win totals the last couple of years, coming off 8-8 and 9-7 seasons. Is this a year, is this a playoffs or bust season? And is there a possibility that with Ozzie Newsome, you know, exiting and Eric DaCosta taking over GM, you have the potential again of Lamar Jackson taking over as the quarterback in 2019? Is there a potential that if this Ravens team falls short of the postseason, they sort of clean house and start fresh with a brand new core of guys?
It's a good question. And I've heard it a couple times, and I hate sounding like a broken record, but there's two outcomes. One is, how short do they fall to the postseason? Was it tiebreakers? Was it they got 10-6 and lost a tiebreaker? Did they get 9-7 and just barely missed another wild card again? Or was this, you know, eight and eight and lower is when it starts to get serious. But if it's 9-7 or 10-6, you know, it's hard to win football games in the NFL. It's really hard to win. It's hard to win 9 games. It's hard to win 10. And there's a reason why that's always the hope. Unless you're an elite team that can produce 12-4, 11-5, or even 13-3, mercy. But if the Ravens hit 9-7, I don't see John Harbaugh leaving. I think they would be able to move and ship Joe Flacco out and say, all right, we think that this could be the biggest problem on our team is the lack of success in the quarterback realm. And now that we have a unique and dynamic playmaking quarterback sitting there as Alex Smith was booted and Patrick Mahomes is now taking over, this could be it. But there's also, if they go below 8-8, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to say John Harbaugh is going to get fired, you know, for him to lose his job, because when you fire somebody in the NFL, you have to have a replacement. You have to have somebody that you believe can out-coach whoever you just let go, whoever you just let walk. And there's not many coaches that I know of that are looked at as highly, respected as highly, and have produced the numbers as impressively as John Harbaugh. So it's really difficult to say whether or not he's actually on the hot seat. with the change of GM. Eric DaCosta, I assume, wants continuity. He doesn't want to blow everything up, but he doesn't want to probably make some things his own and make executive decisions as he's been allowed before, but this is now his show. He's not co-managing. He is now the leader of this ship. So I feel like I danced around the question the entire time, but I don't know. I don't think this is the hot seat year. I think it's Joe Flacco's hot seat year more than anybody else's.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think it's fair. And you did a great job dancing. I like your waltz. I think, I agree with you. Looking, again, as an outsider, my guess is they would have to go 6-10 or 7-9 for them to bounce John Harbaugh. It feels like 8-8, 9-7, you can sort of, and obviously you believe that, and I certainly believe that. 8-8, 9-7 with Joe Flacco, then, let's see what Lamar Jackson can do with the similar supporting cast and see what his playmaking skills can bring to the table and maybe instill and push that record forward in 2019. So I would agree with you. Just curious where your thoughts on. And obviously that's going to be something that we're going to have to see play out over the course of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Kyle, I appreciate you coming on and talking with me. I look forward to talking with you in 5 months. Hopefully, I'm hoping to see Lamar Jackson just for my personal entertainment value. Although, I'm sure the Falcons would much rather see Joe Flacco in that game coming up. But let the people know where they can find you on Twitter if they want to keep in touch with all the latest going on with the Ravens, as well as what's coming up on Baltimore Beatdown in the coming weeks and months.
Absolutely. I'm actually heading to training camp. I'm leaving in 2 days. I live here in Colorado, but I'm going out to the Baltimore Ravens training camp for the third year in a row. I'll be able to report on a daily basis on what's going on with the Ravens and the beloved Lamar Jackson. You can find that on my personal account. I'm going to be using my personal account for the first year. It is at @BB_KylePBarber. We'll be retweeting things from that account on the actual Baltimore Beatdown account, which is at @BMoreBeatdown for Twitter. And then you can always find us online on our website with great production of articles, including film articles going on right now by Deputy Editor Logan Levy. So you can actually see Joe Flacco's struggles and successes through film, which is a really exciting series that I definitely want to pump out. And that's going to be on BaltimoreBeatdown.com.
All right, Kyle. Appreciate it. And we'll do this again, I guess, in the future day when some other throwaway pass rusher joins the Falcons from the Ravens. I guess I'm trying to think, who would it be?
He was never meant to be a pass rusher after his rookie season. I will argue this, because the Ravens definitely wanted him as a pass rusher, and he never became it. But he, for the Ravens, he was an incredible run stopper. So the Ravens used him on downs 1 and 2, and they just shut down that entire right side because nobody would run towards Sizzle because he was top 5 in both running and passing efficiency. And stop run and pass stop efficiency, excuse me. And then they would throw Elvis Dumervil on third down, and that's when he got he broke the record, the franchise record for the Ravens sacks. So you guys signed a run stopper and thought he was going to suddenly turn into a pass rusher when he went from the Ravens defense. So he's going to regress because Ravens defense is so good all the time. This is your guys' fault.
Well,
I liked Courtney, I'm not going to lie. He had a pretty baller statement when they won the Super Bowl, because you won the national title with Alabama, and then the next year you won the Super Bowl with the Ravens his rookie year, and he held up the Lombardi, and he had his Bama championship ring, and he was in the locker room. He goes, "All I do is win championships." And I said, that is way too cool, and I'm so jealous that somebody's able to be like that. But yeah, Courtney Upshaw is the man.
Yeah,
not just in the pass rushing ability.
Yeah, we'll see what he does with the Jets this year.
Thank you so much, Aaron. This was a blast. I'm looking forward to the call here in about 5 months for us to talk about football again, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Last point on Courtney Upshaw before I let you go. We'll see what he does with the Jets this year, but it's funny to me that he's still listed at like 260 when he's been like 300 for like the last 3 years.
He's huge. Yeah, that is adorable. That man is enormous. He's been enormous since like year 2 or year 3 with the Ravens. Like, I remember seeing him and I was like, you are too big of a figure. Like that, you are not 260. Thank you so much for bringing that up, because nobody talks about that. Oh yeah. My goodness!
And I mentioned the comedy that he brings, because when you get that 300-pound bowling ball, and like there was a couple of times over the last couple of years where he would trip and fall, and he would just kind of like try to roll into a quarterback instead of trying to sack him. It's the funniest thing ever, watching Courtney Upshaw play that D tackle position and try to be this prolific pass rusher. So I got a lot of entertainment from it, even if it wasn't necessarily backed up by great production. He's certainly a comedy of errors in some ways.
That's so funny.
Kyle, I appreciate it, man. I had a good time talking with you, and I look forward to talking with you in a couple of months.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, man.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.